Good morning.
Good morning.
Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be giving a lecture at the Zen Center of Denver, obviously on Zoom, and they asked me to talk about reading Dogen, so that's what I'm going to talk to you about today. So, I wanted to talk about the kinds of things that we might want to think about if we want to engage in a kind of in-depth study of Dogen's way, and some things that I perceive as problems that that we can have around this. So I think all of us would agree that Dogen Zenji's texts are difficult to understand. Most of them are, not all of them, but many. But it's not impossible. They're not impossible to understand. He was a brilliant scholar of Buddhism and a great practitioner. This is the most important thing. He's a great practitioner and transmitter of Buddhism. And I'll just add that Dogen considered what he taught to be just Buddhism. He didn't feel like he was teaching a school of Buddhism called Soto Zen. So Dogen's vision was, I would say, is a radical understanding about all being and all beings, the whole of the world of things, persons, processes. He understood them as being one event manifested by individual and particular Dharma positions. Our Dharma positions are times, beings, persons, states of being. And that our practice and our realization, our practice realization, as Dogen would say, one idea, these are the interconnection, interbeing with each other that makes the world. Continuous practice, Gyoji. So in Uji, he says, this is the world, world in the world. So it's a kind of Buddhist theory of everything. And it's developed from the doctrines that he understood about Buddhism and also from the teachings that he received from the people who came before him. So the other important thing about this kind of theory of everything that Dogen had is that it is manifesting in our everyday life. It's nothing special and it's not hidden. So in his text, Shoji, Our Birth and Death, he wrote, to seek the Buddha apart from birth and death is like pointing north when you want to go south. Just understand that birth and death itself is nirvana, and you will neither hate one as being birth and death, nor cherish the other as being nirvana. So I think this is something that we all grapple with in practice. We come to practice thinking that we have to get rid of our daily lives, that somehow there's something wrong with us, all of our problems need to be jettisoned, and that nirvana or enlightenment is somehow outside of this life that we're living. Someplace pure and without problems. So if we come to Dogen with this model about what is realization, what is nirvana, what is our daily life, then we're going to have a hard time grasping his teachings. And we're going to be constantly thinking that somehow we have to transcend this life. So this is a basic teaching of Dogen that, as he says in Kato, we go transform our problems by going into our problems, not by getting rid of them or cutting them off. So this is kind of a segue into the first observation I have about reading Dogen. If we encounter something new in Dogen that we don't understand, we should try to avoid translating it into something we already understand. So, for example, in the Genjo Koan, Dogen talks about going out in a boat and thinking that the shore is moving when the boat is actually moving. And then he interestingly ends the section with, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. So Then he goes on to this very famous passage in Genja Koan about firewood and ash, the nature of firewood and ash and their relationships. So I think we should ask ourselves, why does he suddenly start talking about unchanging self and then segue into talking about firewood and ash? If you say to yourself at this point, well, he says it because the self is empty of inherent existence, and then you just kind of move on. But you might miss asking the question of yourself, what's going on here? Why does Dogen start talking about firewood? Or if I had an unchanging self, then why do I experience that unchanging self as an existing self at this moment? Very real. Doesn't feel like it's morphing into something else at this moment. So what's that about? How does that work? What's the relationship? So actually this question I think is key to why Dogen starts talking about firewood and ash, because he's talking about firewood and how firewood exists and its relationship to ash. And this discussion that he gives at this point in the Genja Koan is actually his explanation of how the self exists as the self that we experience in the present moment. So any time that we translate a teaching we don't understand into something that is especially something that's dualistic as this or that, or into something we already know. And I'll give another example of this. We're in danger of missing the teaching that's being offered. So here's another example. Thinking you know what enlightenment is. So it might not line up with Dogen's idea that realization is very much about your day-to-day life, including your problems. So for Dogen, the dualistic concepts, like when we juxtapose form and emptiness, is not the whole story. Form and emptiness are like two sides of the coin. Emptiness is one side of the coin, and form is the other side. But birth and death is the coin itself. Birth, death, nirvana is the coin itself. And bodhisattva practice is how we spend that coin. How we practice realization, our life. So the point is that we want to find out what he meant, not what we think he might have meant. And so if we immediately read him and say, oh yeah, that he's talking about form and emptiness, but maybe he's talking about something much bigger than these concepts that often we think of as being dualistic, although they're not dualistic because they are exactly the same thing. In Makahanya Haramitsu, he says, his commentary on the Heart Sutra, he says, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, form is form, emptiness is emptiness. He says emptiness is emptiness because emptiness is also form. He says form is because form is already emptiness. Therefore, to say form is to say emptiness, to say form is form. So there's always this way in which Dogen is going to go beyond these kind of concepts that we are dear to our hearts. He's going to say something more about how they operate. So, a way to enter into studying Dogen is to study a trusted source about Dogen's thought. And this will put you in the ballpark, to use a sports analogy. A ballpark of understanding what he's talking about. So if you're going to make a guess, at least you're in the right place to make that guess. So you begin to learn the rules of his game, and you start to understand or have some way of understanding his intention. So how do we do this? Our teachers are guides for us to understand Dogen. We can rely upon their understanding to keep us kind of within the boundaries of that when we ask questions and they say, no, it's not over here, it's over here. Reading commentaries where people talk about what Dogen is talking about, I think is really helpful. I would say that we can do that by reading the commentaries of Zen teachers, which is very good. Shoko Okamura, for instance. And we can also read commentaries by scholars. So if you can find yourself wanting to do that, that's a very good thing to do. So in this talk that I'm giving in Denver, they asked me to talk about Uji. So I'm going to use an example here in Uji. So here, the quote that I'm going to give Dogen is talking about how we have doubts about or questions about the nature of being and time. And here's what he says. He says, even though you do not have doubts about them, so he's talking about being and time, but I think we can also just, I want to use this as a general statement. So we could say, even though we do not have doubts about something, that is not to say that you know this thing. Since a sentient being's doubting of the many and various things unknown to them are naturally vague and indefinite, the course their doubtings takes will probably not bring them to coincide with this present doubt. So here's a perfect example of maybe a passage that's a little difficult to understand. So I'll read it again. Even though you have doubts about something, so I'm paraphrasing, even though you have doubts about something, that's not to say that you know that thing. Since a sentient being's doubtings of the many and various things unknown to them are vague and indefinite, the course that our doubting takes probably won't bring them to coincide with what Hakuin calls the great doubt, coincide with a doubt that enables us to have a kind of realization about the nature of our experience. So we may read Dogen, and we think that we know what he's talking about. We think we understand, even though you do not have doubts about them. That doesn't say that you know them. And then even when we do have doubts about what we're reading, the doubts that we have are not very concise. They're kind of vague and indefinite. And consequently, what happens is we can't kind of muster those doubts in a way. We can't gather the teachings in a way that allows us to come to what Hakuin calls this great doubt. So some doubts we have are doubts that are just kind of questioning about things. And then we have doubts that are corrosive doubts that cause us to really lose our bearing. And then in Zen, we have this idea of the great doubt, which is this doubt that drives us into a place of realization, drives us into a place of insight. And that's what Dogen's calling to bring them to coincide with this present doubt. That's what he means when he says present doubt. And present doubt is Genjo Koan. Present doubt is according with and manifesting the present moment completely, fully, and skillfully. So that's what we want to do when we read Dogen. That's what we want to do, is we want him to bring to us questions. We want to investigate, throw ourselves into his writing in a way that brings about a kind of doubt or question that helps us further our practice. That's his intention. He doesn't write what he's writing in order to present some kind of intellectual, philosophical discussion on the nature of reality. He wrote what he wrote because he wants to convey to us how to practice. He wants to convey to us a larger vision about the nature of reality and how we interact with that reality, and thus our responses are the responses of a Buddha. In Uji, he said, just reflect right now. Is there an entire being or an entire world missing from your present time or not? Just reflect right now. Is there an entire being or an entire world missing from your present time or not? Now, as a Zen student, you know the answer is probably no. No, there's nothing missing. But if we're honest as human beings, we must say, yes, there is something missing. So ultimately, you can't say yes and you can't say no. So how do you find the answer to this question? So you know how hard it is when the teacher says to you in Dokusan or at some other time, right now, is there anything missing or not? What do you say? What do you say? How do you answer that question? How do you reach this place of knowing? It's not intellectual, yet it is grounded in being in the ballpark. You have to just roll around in the infield, smelling the grass, hearing the fans, feeling the rocks, acknowledging everything is presenting, and then quick, the ball comes to you. Can you catch it? Can you catch the ball? This moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. So here's another passage from Uji I think is relevant. So, okay, I'm going to read this passage twice because this is kind of a tough one here. Reaching, this is it from Uji, being time. Reaching is impeded by reaching and not impeded by not reaching. Not reaching is impeded by not reaching and not impeded by reaching. Okay, let's do this again. Reaching is impeded by reaching and not impeded by not reaching. Not reaching is impeded by not reaching and not impeded by reaching. So, like, what does this mean? When I first read the section, here's how I told this to myself, not having any notion of what this is about. This is how I interpreted this section. So I thought it meant something like, reaching gets in the way of reaching and does not get in the way of not reaching. Not reaching is hindered by not reaching and not hindered by reaching. And then I made sense of this. I made up a story about what this meant and that made sense to me about what Dogen was talking about. But guess what? That's not what this passage is about. So what's being translated here as impeded is the word gay in Japanese, and it means something like to be defined by or affirmed by. So that's really different than being impeded by something, the way we would understand that if we just read the passage. So what Dogen is expressing here is that all things have particularity. Our reaching is a particular state, is defined by itself as reaching. So you are you and not somebody else. You're not a dog and you're not a rock or anything else. Furthermore, you are not a blob of oneness. It's not our goal in practice to disappear. We have a self. There is a there there. Dogen's saying we're defined by, are affirmed by our isness. And for this reason, through this affirmation of the self as a self, not as something else, or not with these bound, not without definition, right, as the self. And because that is true, we come to see ourselves as see in the sense of understanding our true self. We come to see ourselves through the context of our own life, through ourselves, through our life. And thus we can enact the Dharma. And thus, when this happens, we can also see all other beings as well. This is a very different meaning than making up a story to ourselves about what we think it means to say reaching is impeded by reaching. And once we know this, it makes sense. We understand that impeded here means to say something is defined by itself. It has definition. Liberation is dependent upon your own life, your own particular who is enlightened. Who is enlightened? Is it somebody else? Is it you? Is it a rock? Who is this? So this who is an expression of interbeing, interconnection with all being and with all beings. And when we're able to do that, we respond with skillful means. This is the Bodhisattva Buddha mind. But that who is you. It's not somebody else. That is the person who is making this response. It's you. That who is also experiencing a particular time. That who is experiencing a particular moment. A particular body, a particular mind, a particular whatever it is, wherever you are. However you're interacting in that moment. This moment of who is the only place that we can express liberation. We cannot express liberation in the abstract. We cannot express liberation as someone else. So it's very important. This is a very, very, very important point the Dogen is making to us about the nature of our practice, about the nature of our life, about the nature of grounding ourselves in the present moment as ourselves, not wishing we were somebody else, not thinking that liberation has to do with somebody else somewhere else, that we are not that person. So this who is also interbeing with all of reality, and at the same time, it's just you. It's just you. So if you don't know what he's saying here, you're going to miss the meaning of this passage. So how do we know this? How do we come to know this? Well, somebody can tell us. If we don't read Japanese and don't know that that's what gay means, somebody can tell us, like we're talking about this right now, or you can read a book. The other thing you can do is you can make sure that you read translations of Dogen that have footnotes. Because when you read the footnotes, you discover that the person who made the translation will tell you this. So that's also very helpful. So I really encourage you to do this. Read different translations, like more than one translation of Dogen, if you want to understand Dogen. So finally, I'm going to end with this. I'll just say, you know, I don't want to discourage you by kind of heaping on to you these methods of investigating Dogen that might feel kind of onerous or something or overwhelming. I hope that you'll continue to study Dogen, that Dogen becomes a koan for you in your life. You know, what is it? What does this mean? So I found that the more I question Dogen, the more I ask and look and say things like when I was talking about Genjo Koan earlier, to say, why? Why is he doing this here? Why? What is the transition here from this sentence to the next sentence? Why would he start say something like, the self is impermanent, and then start talking about firewood? So to ask yourself those questions that will help you go deeper into, that's that kind of doubt, right? Why? Why? To go deeper into understanding this. You know, it's not necessarily bad to read Dogen intuitively, and I know a lot of people who do this, and there's much of Dogen that you can read intuitively that just opens your heart. And I think we read Dogen intuitively. Almost all of us, I would say, we come to Dogen from this intuitive understanding of, wow, there's something going on here. There's something so deep and compelling, and I don't know what it is. There's something about it that calls to me that I just want to read this text. And so that's a good place to start. And we should never lose that beginner's mind. But at the same time, there's this way in which if we actually want to understand the nuances of what Dogen's talking about, we're going to have to put a little effort into it to find out what it is that he means, what it is he's trying to teach us about the nature of reality. So I want to encourage you to keep investigating Dogen with both your intellect and your intuition. So it's like that coin, the two sides of the coin, right? One side is intuition, one side is your intellectual mind, but the coin itself, what it is that we do, is beyond both of those things. What it is that we understand and manifest is beyond both of those things. That's what he wants us to do. So again, I'm going to ask you, how do you spend that coin? How do we find that liberation? How do we make that response? That's what Dogen is trying to talk to us about. Thank you very much.